misses this goalkeeper, Felix. There goes Cardino. He's onside. That's a good cross ball. It's Benet. And a fantastic save by Beck. What a fantastic save by Gordon Beck. Glorious header from Salah.
Gentlemen, welcome. It's very nice to be in your company once again for this mid-Christmas edition of the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Chris Oakley, as some of you may be aware, and it's lovely to be with you once again. Of course, it wouldn't be the Sound of Football if I was on my own. I have to have the three gents who run this show every week and do a sterling job as they do so. It is, of course, Terry DeFellin, Graham Sibley and Jan Bilton. Hello to the three of you.
Hello.
And belatedly, happy Christmas. Yeah, because I was accused in a previous podcast of not caring and not sending you these festive wishes. So, yeah, I'm glad to be able to get that straight.
Really?
Even though I sent two of you Christmas cards.
It did arrive, yes.
Yes, ours arrived as well.
Yes, in good time as well.
Hang about. Two of you. Yeah. I know I didn't get one.
Ah, Ben, you can guess what happened then, can't you, Ben?
I didn't send you one because I didn't know your address.
No, that's fine. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Did you get any Christmas cards, Chris?
Not yet.
Right.
But, you know, we'll allow for the international postage.
Bloody post
office. God, I'm outraged. Bloody post office.
I'm off the complaint to the post office right now.
That's him. What's their Twitter handle?
Indeed, yeah. Hashtag outrage. Right, shall we proceed with our own affairs and get away from this horror subject before I'm found out?
Before the post office found out.
Most people will probably be listening to this at Easter anyway, so it's probably of no consequence. But anyway, let's move on. The fact of the matter is we are, in fact, going to be looking at football as a concept, football as a sport. And we're going to be wondering whether we can actually determine some kind of smaller, more exciting version of the game, much the same way as other sports have been reinterpreted. Cricket, as we know, has now got the 2020 version of the sport. We've got rugby sevens. There are other sports that have basically managed to repackage themselves and promote themselves in a quicker, more exciting form. And we were wondering whether perhaps it was time that soccer did the same thing. If that's the case, how could we make it even more exciting than it already is, as if you weren't excited enough already as a Crystal Palace fan? So, gents, it's time to get round the table here and thrash out some ideas. First of all, the game of football, as we know, two halves of 45 minutes. Too long? Too boring for some? What do you reckon?
I think it's a perfectly good format in itself. However, there's nothing... There's nothing to say that, you know, tweaking with things in a different sport, i.e. one that runs parallel with ordinary football, can't result in something that is even more exhilarating.
I think the barrier to the game for most people, where football isn't their national sport, is the fact that sometimes you end up with 0-0 draws. So I think that, to tweak it in such a way where goals become more frequent is probably the way it would always go, and that's why you had offside became level.
Another thing that things like 2020 and rugby sevens, that another advantage you have is you can play whole tournaments in a weekend or a day even.
Yeah.
Yes.
But of course you can't do that in football. You're only going to be playing one game of football per day.
Yeah.
So the advantage you have is you can fill up a stadium full of fans and play four or five games in one day, four or five 20-minute games. Mm. And yeah, you go in with four teams and you come out with one winner. So.
Yeah, I think that the basis of this discussion should be that the current game as it is untouched.
Yeah.
This is not a proposal that we change football, but this is simply that we maybe devise a short form of the game to run alongside it, never to replace it, because that would be obscene.
Indeed.
I wouldn't want that. I mean, 0-0 draws
heaven forbid, no.
Are all part of it. And if you don't like a 0-0 draw, then you don't like football. And,
all I'm saying is that's the barrier to it.
I totally get that. Yeah, particularly in a new market. But in fact, you know, although there have been some changes to help more goals, this game has globalised on the basis that it is largely unchanged in its rules for many decades now. And people still, and even in America, they're watching it. And that was always said that they could never watch it because they could never stomach a 0-0 draw, but they are. Yeah, you know, but having a bored draw and getting bored at football is part of watching it. It's part of the game. Yeah.
It's
good.
It's meant to be dull.
It does. Yeah. It marks you out as a man. if you can take dull things.
We can't all support Manchester United, Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Munich, Arsenal, Liverpool. We can't all support those teams. We support, you know, most people support craft teams. Well, apart from you. I said we can't all.
You were lucky.
We most of us support crap teams, and you know, so we get crap football. But anyway. That aside.
Listen, you know, speaking as a West Ham fan and having now endured a half a season watching a team with no striker, I know entirely what you're saying.
When I was younger, I went to the Football League Centenary at Wembley Stadium, in which Crystal Palace, for some reason, were involved, along with many, many other teams. And they played, I think they were probably 20-minute matches.
Right.
Over a whole day. Wow. Needless to say, Palace got knocked out after the first round. But, you know, that was not an unexciting format. And it was just simply, they went out for 11 against 11, full-size pitch at Wembley. I think it was 10 minutes each side.
Right.
And it finished on penalties. And it was, you know, remotely exciting.
I was just going to say, was there something at the end, like, you know, if it's a draw at the end of 20 minutes, it goes into penalties, it being that kind of one-off kind of tournament?
Palace lost on penalties, in fact, because I forget who we played as well, but it doesn't matter. But you can look that up, that tournament up on Google, because it was a centenary tournament. And it wasn't bad fare, when you consider that there wasn't a great deal at stake.
Yeah.
But for us, it was very exciting, because it was our first time that we'd actually been to Wembley, Crystal Palace. So we were very excited, and we brought a lot of people. It was convivial and decent.
It is good fun. I mean, I go to the London Sevens every year, and that is a fantastic day out, and you get to see a lot of play. And
this is rugby, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's more or less the same rules, except you have seven aside, 7 minutes each way, and it's very, very quick, and there's a lot of scoring going on. And it's a great atmosphere, because it's quick turnover, and, you know, you can nip out, and it doesn't really matter if you miss too much.
Yeah.
But it's a great day out. And people really get into it. There's you know, there's themes, and there's fancy dress, and there's lots of alcohol.
that sounded hideous.
I'm warming to it.
That sounded hideous up to the alcohol.
It is really good fun. It's really, really good fun. And I think to have something, whether it's along the lines of what you just described, Terry, but certainly a whole day out where you can enjoy a version of the game, I think would be brilliant. I'd definitely go to that.
Well, it's interesting. The first cups ever played for in association, in football, were this whole one day event type thing. So in Sheffield in the 1860s, and they were played with I think three or four teams, and they played for about an hour.
All right.
Each game.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, there you go.
So there is precedent then.
Yes, absolutely. And funny you should say Sheffield. Terry, the answer, Sheffield Wednesday is who Crystal Palace were beaten by on that day.
Oh, there you
so
go.
They bloody were. Well done, you. Yeah. Mark Bright played in that game, and I have a feeling Ian Wright might have played in it as well.
Yeah.
It was just before we started to get good. It was just had that sort of... that team that would eventually go to the cup final in 1990.
Right. Was it 88, wasn't it?
They were just getting their shit together under Steve Coppell. Anyway, thanks for that question. Yeah.
I think there is a difference, isn't there? Because you obviously, Jan was talking about rugby sevens, but there is obviously games, formats for football like five-a-side or futsal, or even beach football.
Beach soccer, of course. Yeah.
But of course, these are played in largely indoors, much smaller pitches.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of different rules. So they are. Although they're very quick, and we really love playing them, they're not. They're removed away from the full size pitch atmosphere, which is of course is very much what a lot of people think football's all about, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So whereas T20 is played on a full-size pitch, Rugby Sevens is played on a full-size pitch, isn't it? So it's still...
Our shorter version, the shorter versions of our game, that is soccer, are actually different sports.
Yeah.
They're very closely related, but they are essentially...
But they are more akin to something like basketball or handball than they are...
Yeah, and the atmosphere in the arenas...
Yeah.
Should you ever see one of these games? I've never actually been to a futsal match as a spectator, or at all, for that matter. I've only ever seen it on the television. And the atmosphere is probably more akin to, say, a handball game.
Yeah.
A European handball
game. And for the beach football, it's more like beach volleyball, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's right. Yeah,
but without the nice things to look at.
Everyone's sort of, like, relaxed and, you know, not really paying too much attention to it. You know, enjoy the sunshine. Mm. And all the entertainment that comes along with it.
Like a Premier League game.
Whenever I watch, it's like a Premier League game, basically, there is a curious lack of intensity. I was about to say with beach soccer that there is perhaps not a curious lack of intensity, perhaps an understandable lack of intensity about these matches. Certainly in terms of atmosphere, I'm sure the players are obviously not, you know, they take it terribly seriously because it's their bread and butter, but because they're dedicated beach soccer players. In the same way there are dedicated futsal players. I mean, people who, you know, you don't get, like, it's not like the old days of snooker and pool, where you'd get snooker players playing pool, you know. You don't get, like, professional footballers who perhaps aren't quite so good then moving over to futsal to see if they can make a better thing. You get dedicated futsal players.
Yeah.
That is their job that they play for. But needless to say, we don't know too much about it in this country because it's never something that we've held with.
Mm.
Indeed. We love our five-a-side in this country.
Yeah, but I think, where most people are turned off by futsal, it's the squidgy ball.
Yeah.
It's playing with the squidgy ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like one of those ones you get at a petrol station, isn't it? It's one of those kind of, for kids.
Well, it's not because it's heavy as well, but it is squidgy, and not like a soft foamy ball, but it is... You know, the first thing any group of guys do when they're playing football is give the ball a good squeeze to make sure it's like a bloody rock.
And then bounce it. And if it hits the ceiling, then it's good to go.
And then then they pull the face to look at you, pull in the face, go, what do you reckon on that?
Yeah.
And throw it to you. You give a good squeeze, you bounce it. And after three or four guys have done this, and then they all realise that no one's actually got a pump.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Right, yeah. It's not because no one's got the confidence to say, yeah, this ball's fine, let's play. You know, we're all prevaricated. Get on with it.
Yeah, because we're all getting old and we can't play for a whole hour.
Yeah.
There is that. I mean, a futsal ball sounds more like a handball ball, which again is quite squidgy. And it's required, obviously, it helps the players to be able to hold on to the ball and it move around. Mm. And in futsal, to move it across the floor so that it stays on the floor, because I don't think there's an overhead height rule in futsal, but I don't know that for certain.
Yeah, I think the reason it hasn't taken off in this country is the name. It sounds like something medical, like you'd put on your lips.
Continental.
It does sound like a treatment, doesn't it?
It does,
Yeah.
Cures cold sores and verrucas.
Yeah. I'm writing out this prescription. Take this to your pharmacy. If you run out, come back for a repeat prescription.
Yeah, consult a doctor if symptoms persist after five treatments.
No, but it does sound a bit like that. But you're right. If five-a-side is such a popular pastime here, participation sport, but I think it would be good to have some kind of festival of football or festival of soccer at the home of football and have several short games. But the idea about changing the size of the pitch or the rules is to have more scoring, to make it more exciting and condense that into small little packages, which is why you've got these games that are splintered off.
What do you think about taking the rugby sevens model, and so having, say, seven players, say six outfield players, and a goalkeeper on a full size pitch in football, do you reckon that'll work?
I think you could probably go eight or nine aside, and you would still get you'd get that extra space.
You'd get more goals that way without having to tamper with the rules, apart from obviously the number of players, which is you wouldn't have to have.
It would be a lot quicker. Yeah, people would be attacking very, very
loads
quickly.
Of space.
You'd have to.
Yeah.
You couldn't really rely on long balls and things like that. Mm. I think it would make for a fast and interesting game.
Interesting tactical as well, because would it be too negative and actually boring? Because in order to stop goals from going in, you'd find you know, you'd have back fives, back sixes. Do you know what I mean? Sort of like, you know, and not enough attacking play because there's so much space.
Yeah.
That you'd be worried about getting behind that line and that no one would be courageous enough to have a go. Do you think that would be a problem?
I don't know. Well,
it's the only way to find out to play it, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I mean, the only thing I can compare it to is rugby sevens, and that's not the case there. It's very, very attacking.
Yeah.
And and then there's a lot of kind of midfield players that kind of close each other down very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, T20 has to have different rules to stop negative play. Because when one day internationals first came in, there was no fielding restrictions.
No.
So, you know, you'd end up with nine fielders around the boundary.
Yeah.
And people were restricted to just knocking singles.
There is an argument to say that one day cricket is a problem sport because they just keep having to change the rules every natural time.
Well, they have to stop every time that the you know the teams come up with some counter measure for
legislation
for scoring.
Against it. Yeah, which doesn't seem right to me.
Well, it doesn't because you know with Test cricket you can compare figures. Playing figures from like ages gone by to the modern time, then obviously like with pitch conditions and everything, they're very difficult to do that. But one day records are almost impossible to compare
because
if you look at the bowling figures of people in the 70s and early 80s, they can't compare to the bowling figures of the modern day. They look so brilliant. These things like Curtly Ambrose only conceding I think less than a dozen runs in 10 overs or something. And of course, another thing is that the length of it's changed. I remember when I first started watching it, it was either 55 overs or 60 overs, and now it's gone down to 50 overs. There's this whole sort of thing where there is no sort of feeling of continuation in the sport.
I mean, that suggests to me that it's perhaps not as good a sport as it could be one day cricket. Test cricket is for me the best form of the game.
Yeah.
But on one day cricket's a bit like, no one quite, I mean, it's too late now, I mean, because it's there.
And we've even seen changes in T20 now. T20 is actually becoming more defensive. It used to be that 160 wasn't really a good enough defensible score in T20, but now it's almost a par now.
But it is interesting to see how the game evolves, and I'm sure, although I mean, now you're the only one, Jan, who knows about rugby sevens, probably maybe Graham. But I mean, is there a kind of perceptible evolution of that sport, you know, say from 20, 30 years ago, do you know, or do you think it's pretty much played like it's always been played?
I think it's been played like it's always been played. Yeah. There's not a great deal of difference to the full size.
How about on your side of the world, Chris? Is it on television over there?
Well, I was just. Yeah, it's actually very popular over here, that form of rugby, actually, the rugby sevens, because. From what I've seen, the countries like Tonga and Samoa and people like that seem to be better at it for whatever reason. I'm not quite sure why, but they seem to have be able to adapt to that style of the game perhaps better than some of the more established teams around the world. And they can kind of get ahead of maybe the likes of, I don't know, the Italys of this world, let's say. And so they're a bit sort of closer to catching up the leading countries. It's very popular. It's on TV a lot. What I wanted to ask, actually, Jan, I mean, you probably know more about this than me. From what I've seen of the rugby sevens, is it the case that what I see a lot is that the ball gets flung out to the wing, and the minute there's any space in front of him, the guy just has got the ball and just runs off, and that's it. There's no tackling. There's no all tactics go out the window, and the guy just runs and legs it straight down at the end of the pitch, and you just seem to get
it
that
tends
every
to be
30
a lot
seconds.
Pace,
is that a bit too sort of severe?
Going back to your point about some of the Pacific Island teams being of a higher standard than they are in the standard game, is. You see a lot of the Pacific Islanders conveniently change their nationality to play for New Zealand and Australia and Wales. So because they can't
I will concede
teams,
that
I think the standard's probably higher in the sevens side of the sport. So you could find that if you had something similar in football, that you could have teams that weren't as big on the world stage actually being a lot better at the shorter game. Because they don't get much of a chance.
Yeah, football, soccer sevens, as I'm sure it was what it would be called,
yeah.
would also have a lot of wing play, but obviously because the goal is in the middle of the touchline rather than having the whole try line,
yes.
You will still get, you'll probably find that defensive lines will be much, much narrower. They'll allow the wingers to come down, because the likelihood of being able to catch up to a flying winger is not so good if, you know, for whatever a fullback is, you know, in these. So you'll probably have really compact defensive lines with wingers trying to basically bombard defences and then sudden break out, you know, through the middle or back down the wings. It sounds quite an exciting prospect.
If I think how would I put out a seven-a-side team, what formation I would use? I'd probably have one centre-back sweeper.
Yeah, definitely.
Two wing backs.
Yeah.
Midfield holding player.
Yeah, sounds makes sense. Goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper, yes.
Oh, interesting. You'd go for a goalkeeper, would you?
Would you play a striker?
Rush goalie.
I would play
an out and out striker.
Since nine.
Yeah.
Because I reckon you probably what you need. Or probably is you need two.
Yeah, I think maybe two deeper lying attacking midfielders.
Yeah.
Really.
Rather than an out and out striker.
Yeah. I think that would be it.
Yeah, but the versatility they'll need to be. I mean, it's a game for utility players. And very very fast wingers.
If I was to put something in there to say, okay, if looking at it in the same way as say one day cricket or T20 cricket, if I was to say, right, okay, if we're going to make one tweak to the rules, it might be to say that you've got to have two players in the opposition half at all time.
That would be an interesting one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what I was going to say. Because here's a comparison for you. Over here, again, in New Zealand, I was just saying before we came on air that netball is very popular, incredibly popular. I mean, the last time I sort of saw netball of any kind was when I was at comprehensive school, and even then I should have been concentrating on football. It just happened to be going on the agenda on the adjacent court. But it's very popular over here, and there is a version of netball which is called Fast Fives, and what they do once a year is they have a competition in Auckland, and it's basically like a World Cup, but based on this other version of the sport. So you have smaller teams, only five as opposed to seven, I think it is, and there's all kinds of stuff going on there, but I'm just thinking about the way you set a team out, and we was talking about earlier on about the flying wingers and everything. I mean, if you were, say, the only nominated striker in a team of seven, and your job was to belt up and down, or, you know, to chase lost causes, then you're going to constantly find yourself being closed down by defenders and the goalkeeper coming out. So I wonder whether you'd have to have actual set rules, like you're saying, Graham, of like saying, you know, you must have, say, two strikers, and you must have three in midfield and three at the back, or whatever it happens to be, you know, just so that you don't end up with games where we've got some poor soul up the front, you know, in attack, just kind of hoping for a ball to kind of land at his feet, and then he just has the keeper to beat or something like that. Maybe you'd have to formalise it a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, we've got offside rules in football, and so an offside rule in sevens would obviously be very different, and it might have something to do with making certain that there was X number of players in a certain part of the pitch at any one time. But I don't think that would be necessarily unnatural or inorganic, because football.
I don't think it would. There might be the call for painting the extra line on the pitch, but I think
the thing is with netball, not just in this Fast Five form, but in netball generally, I think I'm right in saying that the pitch is divided into thirds and the players do have to stay within their allocated.
It's
probably more suited to that.
Yes, I wouldn't like to see that where you got to stay in certain. I don't mind there are two players in one half.
They're developing goal line technology. They've got to use that system for something. You know, have you stepped over the line? Well, yeah.
it's not being used here, is it?
See? It's all there.
Not many game used.
No, I mean that's a first rule. Football seven.
One of the great beauties of our beautiful game is its simplicity.
Yes.
It's a very very easy game to play. It's an impossible game to master. But one of the reasons for its simplicity is it's cheap to play and it's versatile, and so. If you were to introduce a shortened form of the game, you'd still have to stick to those basic rules. Keep it very, very straightforward.
To play and set up so that
it's relatively easy to set up. So even if you're playing jumpers for goalposts, if you can just put another couple of extra jumpers along the side, say, right, this is the offside line. So, yeah. And that's
stops it. You running out for a ball. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it would probably help in that respect as well. Yeah. So, I mean, and then that way it keeps the game, you know, relatively simple. Well, I wonder which area. I wonder, how do you reckon something like that would go down in New Zealand as a kind of entrance to an introduction to the sport? Do you think it could be used as a gateway in areas where perhaps it's not so popular, a bit of a gateway drug for
possibly. I mean, I remember not long after I first arrived in New Zealand, about a year ago, I turned the TV on and one of the Sky Sports channels over here was, I saw it listed, futsal, you know, 12 o'clock midday. And I thought, oh, well, this is going to be interesting. We'll see what it is. And it was like the New Zealand National Futsal League. Just sort of talking about the futsal thing just for a moment. And I sort of thought, oh, maybe they're ahead of us. They're even ahead of the, you know, England in terms of futsal. And it was just like, I'm sorry to have to paint this kind of picture, but it just seemed like 30 guys that maybe had just come out of the bar and they walked into a sports centre and they had the hall to themselves and they just had rolling matches and there was the camera work couldn't pick up what was going on. The players just didn't seem to have any particular quality and it was all a bit shambolic. And I was just thinking, well,
man,
if we are,
I've got to find this on
YouTube. it just had the kind of, I don't know, pub league element about it, if you know what I mean. So if there was to be a different version of the sport, I think it would be more appealing, actually. I think, you know, it's without being deferential to the standard of New Zealand football at the moment. The funny thing that's just come to my mind is that I remember seeing something on the internet a long while ago. It might have been put up by our mutual friend Steve Gabb, who was mentioned very recently on the podcast. It was a thing about, I think, in one or two places in the UK, you get these triangular pitches. So it's sort of like you have like three goal mouths and you have actually three teams. I wonder, that's perhaps taking things a bit too far. Ooh. I don't know. But it's just interesting. I just find the whole thing curious because from a UK perspective, you have five-a-side football is very popular. Lots of people play it. But when you see it, say, on TV, it tends to be like the seniors, you know, the senior league and the thing at the end of the season, all the old pros playing, which is...
The Masters isn't there, which I think is finished now. Isn't it? I don't
Masters,
think they
exactly,
do that
yes.
anymore. Do they still do the Masters?
Yes. I don't know.
No, Sky used to cover it, didn't they?
It was a bit rubbish because it was Gosh. Just they were just having a laugh. Weren't yeah, it? Wasn't,
yeah.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
No one wants to. No one wants to see fat ball men in polyester, do they?
Not unless they're paying.
The good thing was that Jan Mulby didn't look any different.
he was made for that, wasn't he?
He was.
Chris,
even at the age of 21.
Chris, this is worth a Football Attic article, isn't it? The London Sixes, is that what they used to be called?
I've already put up a video to that. Yes, it used to be the London,
Stout
Fellow. Sixes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that carried on up until the early mid-90s. And that was an end of season tournament between all the London teams, a six-a-side tournament. Mm.
Yep.
And with first team players.
Yep.
And it was five-a-side, or six-a-side rather.
Yes.
Indoor.
In fact,
and it was good fun.
That was pretty much the only competition that West Ham won at any stage in like the 1980s.
Yes. Palace won it a few times as well. Unsurprisingly, the last one I saw, Wickham Wanderers won it. Under Martin
London, the London Sixes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. They were just barely scraped in, classed as London. Well, Watford played as well, and you know, there are those who argue strongly that that's not a London side.
Pitchforks and torches at the ready.
In Germany, they I think they still have a similar one for the winter break, an indoor five-a-side
yes.
or six-a-side mm-hmm. tournament.
Oh, that would be brilliant.
Which they do, and also in pre-season they have the Liga Total Cup, which is 11-a-side but half an hour.
Yes.
Among four teams over 2 days.
Mm. Yeah, that's sort of like their league cup, isn't it?
Yes, sort of almost. Like their league, yes, yeah. I mean,
but
it's
still like the high-placed teams in the cup.
Yeah, it's usually the host, whoever that might be, right. Plus, yeah, the first, second, third, or, you know, and something like that, along those lines. Bayern Munich won it, I think.
Really?
Yes. Mm. Oh, did they? I don't know.
Good for them.
Well, silverware for Bayern Munich.
Hungry success.
In fairness, Bayern didn't win the Super Cup this season, which is their version of our charity, of the charity shield, the community shield. They lost it to Borussia Dortmund.
They were gutted.
But they were well, they would be gutted because they won the World Club Cup, so they would have won six in a year if they won that Super Cup, which was equaling Guardiola's record under Barcelona, when he was manager of Barcelona. Anyway, we're slightly deviating. But in fairness, there is 29 minutes and 48 seconds on the clock.
So I was just going to say, I'm not sure we've actually come up with an authoritative answer to how to move football forward.
Well, that's the same football for you. Well,
yes, the talks are ongoing. But yes, we've come up with some ideas, and maybe at some point in the future, someone will come up with a way of packaging football in such a fashion as we've discussed. But do send in your own suggestions. That's what we can always suggest.
Maybe they'll just leave it as it is.
Yeah,
they might just say, actually, it's fine as it is. We'll just leave it
fine,
as it is.
Let's go.
Because it is great as it is.
It is great as it is. Yes, there we go. So basically, that is the last half an hour of your listening wasted. Anyway, thanks. thanks for joining us for that, though, anyway. Needless to say that everybody listening in, you have an extra lucky package on your way, in that the Best of 2013 show is on the way for the end of the year, just for once. And you'll be able to hear all the best bits that Terry, Jan and Graham have been conjuring up for your entertainment during the course of the year. So do check that out. It'll be heading your way soon. Sorry, you were going to say, Graham?
No, that was it.
that was it. Okay. I do apologise. We must get a script one of these days. Anyway, fellas, thanks for having me back. And it's been lovely to speak to you again. And do have a wonderful 2014. And keep up the good work and all that.
Yeah, we'll probably get you back on for the 200th issue or something like that. Yeah,
200th issue. That's going to be later on next year, yes?
Probably next season, isn't it?
It will probably be at the start of next season. Yeah. Yeah, depends how much we do in the World Cup, really.
Let's try and get you on during the World Cup. Try and get you on during the World Cup, then, Chief.
Yeah.
Because we'll do some stuff over the World
Cup. That would be excellent.
Yeah, certainly.
Cool.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening in. And don't forget to join Jan, Terry and Graham again very soon. But for the time being, from the four of us, it's goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us via our website on solfpodcast.com. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/soundoffootball. And, of course, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Marvellous.